Abelinas went on their way out to build houses on one fine day. Came to a crossroads, drink a cafe. Here they go on their separate ways. First little pig takes some tumbleweed. He built his house up in record speed. No time at all, the house is all done. Tumbleweed Avenue number one.
There you go. Urban pests in and about and around your house. We just took a call from Merle, who's from northwest Tucson, kind of out there by Marana, north of Saguaro National Park. A bobcat in the area was killing as many as 8 chickens a day. I like his idea of using the chickens for fly control in the arena, but I've got, let's bring Darren back into the conversation. But I've got to get to Ken's question, because if anybody's going to know the answer to Ken's question, it's going to be my son, Romy. Ken, good morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine, okay. One thing that I used to do in addition to what I'm going to ask you, the first question, I take PVC pipe, like half inch, glue it together, make the U on my wall, and then I put it out about 3 feet, and then I take and run it in the area, you know, I've got nothing behind me, if you know what I'm saying. And I put my electric fence in there. And now I have it about 3-4 feet outside the wall, and I have nothing ever jumps over. Okay?
Okay. So you're extending the electric fence up high out away from your wall so they'll hit it as they're coming over, keeping them from that point of trying to decide.
Yeah,
okay.
And years ago, I did just the opposite to keep my dog in the yard. Okay,
all right.
And then when I got rid of my dog, it could jump the wall. I put it outside in one area. But what I have a friend who swears that to keep javelina and coyotes and all that away, he has his wife store urine for him, collected, and once a month he pours urine around the outside, 3-4 feet outside his, where he really has a, you know, fence. It's really not a wall. And he says, if you put that out there once a month, and I said, well, I'm single, I guess. And he said, no, it only works for female urine. And I just wonder what the expert's got to say.
I thought Romy would be the expert. He's got my 4-year-old grandson. Has that boy ever used an indoor bathroom? Not that you can remember, huh? Let's bring Darren into the conversation and see what he has to say about that. How about human urine as a deterrent to urban pests that want to come in your yard?
Well, I know there's been some talk of that, and I don't know how much studies that's been done on that. And my counterpart in Tucson, they recommend using male urine. So they're telling single ladies that if they have a male friend to pee in a spray bottle and go spray around, you know, the yard about 18 inches up and stuff, though, where these bobcats would come in and,
you know,
be attracted to that.
So, Bonide is an American-made product, and they have a product called Repels All that comes bottled, and you can just spray it, and it. When you're done, you don't. Just saying.
It's
there's an alternative.
A little bit more hygienic. And Romy, what about we've kept bobcats off our property with that motion activated lawn garden hose?
Okay.
It's called a Scarecrow. Contact makes it. It's a Canadian-based company, or was. It seems like the last few times I've tried to find Contact, they're not around. But the Scarecrow brand is, so I'm trying to figure out who's manufacturing. But regardless, you plug it up to a hose, you put a 9-volt battery in, and it has about a 20-foot diameter on a 90 or 180-degree radius. And you can daisy-chain it, so you could put 3 or 4
sure.
of these up around and create a parameter, and any time it picks up motion, it shoots off a burst of water.
Yeah,
those work very well for bobcats year-round, but in the winter times, they'll work on a whole host of things that are coming into your yard, including coyotes and javelina and things like that, because especially if they're coming in at night, pre-dawn hours, when it's cold out, these animals don't want to be wet, so it can be very effective in the wintertime as well.
All right. Now, I can remember a particular instance in when our drought was about the worst. I want to say it may be as long as 10 years ago. Y'all were actually getting calls of bears in East Mesa. Now, How do you handle a bear in my neighborhood phone call?
Well, bears are a little bit different. Not only big game animal, but they are predatory as well and stuff. Though, so you know, we kind of look at you know the potential human risk or human safety risk when it comes to that. The other part of it is you got bears coming into the valley. This is not bear habitat, so they are not where they should be. So anytime you have a bear in the valley here and stuff, you know, we ask that you call us, you know, either call our 24-hour number or Operation Game Thief hotline, and we'll come out and we'll try to get that bear out of here. It was in 2000, so it's been a little while, where we had 22 such bears that came into the valley. One made its way even real about a quarter mile from ASU's main campus. So, yeah, pretty crazy year when there was extreme drought. None of the food sources materialized that year. You know, your prickly pear fruit, your acorns and things like that. So these, it was mostly younger bears, younger males that were getting kicked out of, you know, good places, you know, good food source areas. And they're just trying to find their way, and they just kept going and ended up in the valley here.
Y'all dart them and then relocate them and hope they don't come back? Is that the management plan there, and pray for rain and they get their food sources back where they should be?
Exactly. If they're young bears, like most of those were, then they get a second chance. And we try to find, you know, I think with those bears, they got housed at Southwest Wildlife until an appropriate time of year to get put back out there when there's more food sources. The other thing, you know, is, you know, look at what kind of interaction they're doing. If they're a problem bear and causing problems, you know, they may not get the second chance and stuff, though. It depends on what the interaction. If they're aggressive towards people, we're not going to relocate a problem bear like that.
Well, I can tell you, we're going to bring Karen into the conversation, and she's going to talk about an urban pest that we talk about in the article, that we probably get more phone calls than any other urban pest. Karen, good morning out in Queen Creek. Welcome to Rosie on the House.
Thank you. So, yeah, this, I'm about ready to cut this aurora down. This started last year, and this woodpecker has made a hole. Well, he's on his third hole. And I don't, you know, I thought, well, that's what they do. Except that as he works away making this hole, he is splattering the side of my house with this black sticky stuff, which is near impossible to get off. And it's on my bedroom window and on the windowsill. And I can take my hose and I can put it on the, you know, the super spray, and I can stand out there for 20 minutes and practically flood my backyard and get most of it off. But the next morning he's up there, you know, and it starts all over again.
All right, Darren, that's a tough one. Woodpeckers.
Well, I'm not sure what the black
sticky
stuff is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I tried sticking. I have a lemon tree. I had a friend go up there and put a lemon in the hole. Well, that lasted about 5 minutes. And then, you know, I've tried spraying the holes with different things. I had a friend that went up and put some wire up over one of the holes. And what he ended up, the woodpecker stands on the wires to work on the hole, so that didn't work.
All right. Well, you've certainly tried a few things. Let's turn it over to Darren here. Darren, what do you think?
Well, woodpeckers are poking holes in your house for only a few reasons and stuff, though. One would be, you know, springtime, they're trying to excavate a location to have a nest. Homes aren't a very good location to build a nest, but sometimes that happens. The other thing would be, first and foremost, you want to look at your home to make sure you don't have any problems with wood-boring insects, particularly termites, because these animals, the woodpeckers, will dig into wood siding and things like that to, you know, for termites and other wood-boring insects, the larvae and things like that. So that would be part of your solution. The other things is look at things to deter them, whether it's hanging Mylar tape, CDs that are going to flash sunlight. They even go so far as to make these big old spider things that detect that pecking and pounding noise, and they come down and they wiggle and flash their eyes. There's a whole bunch of commercial products. After that, if you're not having any relief to physically and get rid of completely get rid of that woodpecker, it does require a permit from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, because almost all birds are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and you will need a depredation permit in order to take or to kill that woodpecker. So, but they're not just going to give you a permit without trying all these non-lethal things. But first and foremost, look at, you know, why it's attracted to that area, and then look at all these other methods to discourage it. You know, there's all kinds of different things that are out there. If you simply Google woodpecker control, you'll find a whole host of information on online.
And Karen has a tougher problem than most people, where they're actually pecking on the house.
Correct.
This bird is doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing, pecking in a saguaro. The saguaro is apparently so close to the house that the debris, the mucus, is landing on her house. Karen, you've got a tough problem. Isn't going to be any easy way to keep that bird off of that cactus. We have recommended for years that if you have a woodpecker pecking in a particular area of your home, to cover that entire area with Tabasco sauce and cayenne red pepper. And that seems to be a pretty good darn deterrent. Darren, have you ever tried that?
I have not tried that and stuff, though. Typically, stuff that smells isn't going to be a good deterrent for birds, because birds don't have a very effective nasal cavity and stuff, though. But, you know, that taste and certainly can probably irritate them if it gets on them. That could probably be pretty effective. You know, kind of think of, you know, any of these problems and stuff, though. It's the more things you do in combination with each other is the better you're going to have, better results you're going to have, longer lasting results you'll have as well. And I didn't catch that they were picking on a saguaro. At least the saguaro is not your home, so it's probably, you know, lesser of two evils.
Right. Okay, let's see if we can bring Susan into the conversation real quick. We've got Susan, Johnny, and Darlene all want to talk to Darren. Susan, real quick, please.
Oh, Suzanne?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I just have a story about a coyote last Saturday on Lindsay and Baseline in Gil.
Okay.
So my sister recorded a coyote burying a chicken in her backyard. And then the coyote left and they dug up the chicken. I guess there's no more free range chickens anymore. I don't know, but.
That coyote was seasoning his meat. You know, they don't always like it fresh. Sometimes you got to age your meat a little bit.
Is that a typical coyote behavior, Darren?
Not typical, but if they have, you know, killed more than they can eat, we do see occasionally where they will cache some food sources and stuff. It's pretty typical of a bobcat or a cat doing that, whether it's a bobcat or a mountain lion, you know, caching a food source and coming back for it again and again. But occasionally we'll see coyotes do that as well.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about keeping rabies from your domestic animals. Hang on, Johnny, you're next.